Truth Be Told by Kathleen Barber. Read by Rebecca Ross.
Excerpt from Reconsidered, The Chuck Berman Murder, Episode 1, An Introduction to the Chuck Berman Murder, September 7th, 2015. Charles Chuck Berman had no enemies. A mild-mannered professor of American history at a small Midwestern liberal arts college, Chuck was respected by his colleagues and well-liked by his students. Each year, students in the history department at Elm Park College held an informal vote to determine their favorite professor, and each year, Chuck Berman was crowned the winner. By all accounts, he was similarly well-regarded in the community of Elm Park, Illinois, where he made his home. People recalled his participation in thankless volunteer projects, like organizing the annual town Halloween parade, selling raffle tickets to support the Civic Arts Center, and manning the cash register at the library rummage sale. Even his family life seemed picturesque, a young, beautiful wife, and a set of adoring, well-behaved daughters. Chuck Berman was living the American dream, but then, on October 19, 2002, this popular and congenial man met an untimely end. Shot at point-blank range in the back of the head in his own kitchen. Warren Cave, the 17-year-old next-door neighbor, was arrested and charged with the murder. He was convicted and is currently serving a life sentence. Chuck Berman's murder was a shocking, senseless crime, but at least justice has been served, right? Right? But what if Warren Cave didn't do it? What if he's spending his life in prison for a murder he did not commit? My name is Poppy Parnell, and this is Reconsidered, the Chuck Berman Murder. I'm going to spend the next several weeks investigating these questions and others that may arise. My goal? To take a hard, unflinching look at the scant evidence that might have convicted an innocent man, and to perhaps uncover the truth— or put to rest any lingering doubts about what really happened that fateful night in October 2002. I hope you'll join me for the ride. Chapter 1. Nothing good happens after midnight. At least that's what Aunt A used to tell us whenever we begged for later curfews. We would scoff and roll our eyes and dramatically pronounce she was ruining our social lives. But over time, I came to see the wisdom in her words. Trouble is the only thing that occurs between midnight and sunrise. So when my phone rang at 3 o'clock that morning, my first thought was, something bad has happened. I instinctively reached for Caleb, but my hand grasped only cool sheets. Momentary panic fluttered in my throat, but then I remembered Caleb was 3 weeks into a trip overseeing aid workers in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Still half asleep, I dimly worked out it was 8 o'clock in the morning there. Caleb must have forgotten about the time difference or miscalculated it. Frankly, neither mistake seemed like him, but I knew how draining these trips were on him. The phone rang again, and I snatched it up with a hurried greeting, eagerly anticipating Caleb's familiar Kiwi accent— the soft rumble of his voice saying, Joe, love. But there was nothing. I sighed in frustration. Caleb's calls from abroad were always marked with exasperating delays, echoes, and strange clicks, but they had been particularly difficult on this trip. Hello? I tried again. Caleb? I think we have a bad connection. But even as the words left my mouth, I noted the lack of static. The connection was crisp. So crisp, in fact, that I could hear the sound of someone breathing. And something else. What was that? I strained to listen and thought I heard someone humming, the tune familiar but unplaceable. A warning tingle danced up my spine. Caleb, I said again,